Hello, and welcome to A Health Podyssey. I'm your host, Alan Weil. The entire April 2024 issue of Health Affairs focuses on the topic of perinatal mental health and well-being. Indigenous women, according to research, are at elevated risk of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So how do we bring the voice of tribal communities into efforts designed to improve perinatal mental health? That's the topic of today's episode of A Health Podyssey. I'm here with Amy Stiffarm, Director of Native American Initiatives at Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, Montana. Dr. Stiffarm and co-authors published a paper in the April 2024 issue of Health Affairs describing the organization's approach to supporting the perinatal mental health needs of tribal communities in Montana. We'll discuss how they carried out their work and why their approach is so important in today's episode. Dr. Stiffarm, welcome to the program. It would be great to have you introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, my name is Amy Stiffarm, and I am a member of the Aani Nation of the Fort Belknap Indian Community in North Central Montana. I'm also Chippewa Cree and Blackfeet. I grew up in Harlem, just a few miles off the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation, and then lived on the Flathead Indian Reservation for a long time while most of this work was happening, and just recently relocated to Helena, Montana, so the capital of our state, and that's where HMHB is based out of, though a lot of us still do work remote. Yeah, so just happy to be here.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you with me. And I'm really looking forward to talking about the project that you were involved in that led to the paper in Health Affairs. During the introduction, I just briefly mentioned the research on perinatal mental health for Indigenous women and birthing people. But maybe you could go a little deeper and talk about what we know about that population.
Yeah, of course. And really, overall, I don't think we know a whole lot. And that's like the big problem. For the information that we do have, it varies. So right now for like the general population, it's estimated that 12.5% of people in the United States suffer from postpartum depression. There's been different studies in different areas of the United States, and it kind of shows a range for as low as 14% all the way up to nearly 30% of American Indian or Alaska Native women and birthing people experiencing postpartum depression. And that's when we're talking about mental health, perinatal mental health. Postpartum depression is really just like one issue on a spectrum of mental health complications that can occur. So even just that we're only talking about postpartum depression is one issue. And then we really don't have a lot of data. And I would say also too, for the data that is collected, there's not a lot of, I would say, like maybe local stakeholder involvement or ways. There have been other data collection efforts that where they really include tribal communities or Indigenous leadership, and they are able to kind of tailor the data collection method so that it matches the culture of the community. So even things like language changes or using different words or descriptors or having data collection that's more aligned with oral tradition versus like a survey that you mail in. So there are lots of strategies where this type of data can be tailored to better fit Native populations in the United States, but to my knowledge, it's not happening. So there's a lot of work that needs to happen on the data part of this.
Well, the lack of respect for and attention to the population is a key element of what led to the project that you were involved in. As you set up in the paper, there are three realities that influence tribal communities today, and it seems important, I think, if we're going to talk about the engagements you made with the community, to also understand sort of the backdrop here. So I wonder if you could say a little bit about what those realities are as you described in the paper.
Yeah, definitely. And even just to preface that, my background is in Indigenous health. So I completed the PhD program at University of North Dakota in Indigenous health. And this is all stuff that our cohort and our faculty was very focused on. We got to dedicate our entire learning to really thinking through not so much like relearning the disparities about what's happening. We all know the inequities, we've lived them, we've read about them, but we were really able to focus on solutions and some of the really innovative work by other Indigenous scholars that are leading similar efforts in, you know, not necessarily maybe perinatal mental health, but other fields. So this work all happened, I feel like, because of my education and my opportunity and my privilege to dedicate time to learn about these things and learn about what's new and what people are saying. But because of that, yeah, we have these three realities that we're dealing with when we're talking about this kind of work. The first one being that tribal communities are experiencing unique social determinants of health due to settler colonialism. So there are papers by Indigenous scholars that talk about social determinants of Indigenous health. So that's really helpful when looking at these issues, because that means that the barriers and inequities that Indigenous people are facing are different than the general population. And so the approach to addressing these issues need to really consider that. Impacts of settler colonialism are things like historical trauma. When I was first studying perinatal mental health, when I started my PhD program, there were hardly any papers talking about historical trauma. Whenever you talk about perinatal mental health, there's always this aspect of trauma increasing your risk, but none of the papers, even the ones that were reporting data on Indigenous people, weren't talking about the historical trauma that happened because of settler colonialism in the United States. So that was concerning for me. There's also just white supremacy in general, like things like how the United States was founded and how that created different values and ways of being in compared to like traditional knowledge versus Western knowledge, and even things that kind of stem from white supremacy, like racism or discrimination. All of those contribute to health disparities in Indigenous communities, and really trying to focus on how those disparities are impacting perinatal mental health specifically. The other reality, one of them, is Eurocentrism. So the belief that Western European ways of knowing is greater than, better than, superior than Indigenous knowledge systems, or even that like Indigenous knowledge systems have been othered. So when we think of even college institutions, university systems, like who were those designed for? Not my people, not my community. And because of that, how Western medical systems, how research institutions interact with tribal communities have always kind of came from this place of like, we know better, our way is the only way. And so they've kind of ignored traditional knowledge. That's changing now. So that's really great. And the third one is kind of just like, because of all of this, when non-native, non-Indigenous organizations or agencies want to work with tribes, they're kind of just like pushing their approaches onto other people, are coming to them with like, we can help you, you know. And so I talk about white saviorism in the paper and how that is really harmful for working with tribal communities, because you're not valuing the knowledge and the strengths and the power that Indigenous populations and tribal communities already have within their culture. And so it's really important to, for those organizations, when they're approaching work and engaging tribal communities, to really be critical and think about, why do I want to work with this community? What is my real intention here? And really be willing to share their power and kind of come at it from a place of allyship, you know, where they're constantly being critical of their intention and the work that they're doing and making sure that it's done in a good way.
So your paper walks through a process that tried to overcome or respond to some of these realities. Before I ask you a little bit about how you engage the community, can you just give me a brief sense of what it is you were setting out to do in the project?
Yeah, it was really a great project, and it was really special for Montana because we have so many rural communities. And so the organization that I work with now, Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies Montana, was tasked with creating a online statewide resource guide. So Montana is a huge state, lots of rural communities, And what happens a lot is you come from a small community and you travel to a healthcare provider, you know, for not just Native populations, but you have to leave your home community for prenatal appointments, you know, sometimes like 100 miles, like one way to get to your prenatal appointment for some of these communities. So what HMHB was seeing, and they really are, HMHB, what we do is we're really providing programmatic support to the programs that are serving the perinatal population, but also the 0 to 3, so like early childhood populations. And so when we were talking to people, what they were saying was like, it's hard to refer people because they're in, say, like the capital here in Helena, but their clients are in these smaller towns and they don't know who is there. They don't know who is running the local clinic there or who to refer to. It was really innovative because it was also to serve that purpose for providers and like connecting to local resources, but also for families, because what we know is like, being a new parent, it's a steep learning curve and it can be really isolating. So our resource guide serves the purpose of being available to families for that. It's online, easy to access. You can search it by where you're located at, and you could also search it by service in case you need to like travel out for that service. And then also providers can know when they're helping people, like care coordinators or that kind of thing. They can make sure that they know what resources their patient has in their local community. So make sure they're referring to the right places. So it was really exciting, really innovative that, I mean, it's like resource guides aren't innovative. Like people have been having resource guides for a long time, but really being able to make these referral connections across large distances, that's pretty innovative. So they wanted to include tribes. They wanted to include the reservations in Montana. Montana has 7 reservations. And this was about the same time that all of the data was coming out about the inequities that American Indian, Alaska Native women and birthing people face around maternal health and perinatal mental health. So they wanted to address it, but at the time there weren't any Native people working in the organization. So they knew about me from previous work, and I was at their annual conference that they host, and they knew that I was in my Indigenous health program and that I was studying perinatal mental health and that I was from Montana and had experience working with tribal communities. So they hired me on contract to do this work. And that was kind of where I came in, was like, all right, how do we do this with the tribal communities in a good way, in a right way? And we were really able to like advocate to our funders and show them like why we have to take this extra time to invest in tribal communities, why it's different, right? We're dealing with different realities than a general population. And if we want to do a good job, we have to take our time. So it was really, I'm really proud that we were able to do this project together.
It's a really exciting project. And you mentioned in the paper that the first thing you did was asset mapping. I wonder if you could say a little bit about why that was important, what it is, and why you began there.
Well, it's helpful too when we're to think about how we did this with the counties in Montana. So a lot of the counties already had groups through like early childhood coalitions and whatnot that were meeting on a regular basis already. HMHB convened them, like they already had these relationships with this group. So they were able to utilize them and their knowledge and expertise about their communities to map the assets in their community. So asset mapping is really just like where you're looking at your area and you're like, what are the assets that we have? So in this case, it's like, what assets do we have for this population of perinatal people, pregnant and parenting families, and for babies age 0 to 3? What are the resources here? And there was a special emphasis on perinatal mental health and access to substance use treatment. When I came on to do the Indigenous communities, it was during COVID. At that time, tribes were very busy here in Montana, like other places in the U.S., with protecting their people. You know, a lot of the folks in communities that normally did perinatal work were kind of rerouted to mass testing events and contact tracing and things like that to protect the community, because Indigenous people were suffering at a greater rate than other people from COVID. At first, I was just trying to not be buggy, not be burdensome to them, knowing like what we were all facing. I would call people that I knew. I was using my networks and reaching out to folks on Facebook, finding programs that were listed online, to just try to kind of do the asset mapping myself. And when I was calling people too, like they weren't aware of HMHB, you know, so I was kind of giving this like, oh, well, there's this great program. They offer all these other things that I'm not involved in, but you know, so I was making like these connections for them too. And we ended up realizing, I'm like, this is not good enough. Like this is me coming in to, you know, virtually even, you know, remotely coming into these communities and deciding for the community what their assets are, what their strengths are, even though I'm a Native person, like that didn't feel right. Like even for my own community, that didn't feel right because I hadn't lived there so long, even though I call it home and my family lives there. I knew that from what I was learning, that this isn't good enough. So that's when we really pitched it to our funders, like, hey, no, we got to really invest in this and we need to meet with them. We need to give the communities an opportunity to have ownership in this process. We need to tell them about HMHB. We need to give them the time to see what I've already collected and hear their feedback and let them decide for themselves what are the strengths in your community. It took us another year to do that, but it was so great. It was just, like I said, like really awesome to have the support of my coworkers and our funders to be like, okay, let's do it. And it was funny because I first said, like in hindsight, you know, my contract was ending and I'm like, you know, I think we should have done this from the start. It's not too late. You guys can go ahead and do this. And they were like, great. Do you want to do it? And so I kind of talked myself into another contract, but I mean, it was perfect to be able to serve these communities, work with these communities, right when I'm in my Indigenous health program. It was like on the ground learning and just grateful for it.
Well, I want to talk to you some more about what came out of this and why it's useful to the community. We'll cover those topics after we take a short break.
Great.
And we're back. I'm speaking with Dr. Amy Stiffarm about supporting perinatal mental health through collaboration with tribal communities in Montana. Before the break, we were discussing the process that Dr. Stiffarm and colleagues used in trying to put together this guide. I want to turn a little bit to what came out of it. One element of that is what you describe in the paper as the Native cultural connections category as part of the guide. And you mentioned in the paper that this is aligned with the two-eyed seeing approach to health promotion. That's something maybe not all of our listeners are familiar with, and love it if you could explain what that approach is and why it was important in the work that you did.
Of course, yes. And again, shout out to my education opportunity. We learned about two-eyed seeing from Dr. Nicole Redvers in her Principles of Indigenous Health course. And she was actually on my committee and is one of the authors too. And so two-eyed seeing in health promotion specifically was actually coined by Mi'kmaq elder Albert Marshall. And two-eyed seeing is really where with one eye, you can see the strengths and the benefits of like Western ways of knowing. But with the other eye, you're seeing the strengths of the Indigenous ways of knowing. And, you know, with both eyes, seeing these multiple strengths, you have different and more avenues of healing. When you're talking about what came out of it, one thing that was really awesome, I think, is knowing that these communities had strength in their culture. Like I said, we did the counties ahead of time. There was already people who were doing that work. And it was just kind of like this standard list, right? Of like pediatricians, mental health therapists, substance use treatment. So it was just kind of this standard list. And so when I was going through, that's what I was going off of. But from what I was learning in school, I kind of thought something was off. And then after we met with the groups on the reservations, it was confirmed that we were missing out on cultural strengths. So it's been known and it's proven, like it's in the research, that having a strong cultural identity is a protective factor against mental health complications. And so things that promote strong cultural identity, like many cultural programs that reservations have, there wasn't a place to list those in the resource guide. We didn't have a service category related to that. After meeting with people and hearing, you know, what they had, so things like language programs or powwow dance classes for families, sewing, moccasin making, all of these things that are about family, they weren't able to be listed. And so we was able to take that information back and say, hey, this is a category that we need to include. So Native cultural connections was added. And so that way, someone who is, like, say where I'm from in Fort Belknap, that is struggling with mental health complications after their baby's born, they can, yeah, look for a therapist, look for the resources, like from that Western point of view, but also in our resource guide, see the strengths of the culture, see our Indigenous strengths listed in the guide and access those as well. That was really important to me because it makes it aligns with like Indigenous worldviews of health, like that more holistic balance of well-being. And it makes it just more relevant to the tribal communities. And also too, like if you're comparing a county or an urban area in Montana with like a reservation without the Native cultural connection category, it looks like we don't have any resources or that we're bare or you know, and I know that that's not true because I'm from that community. I know I've benefited from a lot of the strengths. So it was almost personal being able to list that and show like, no, we do have strengths and they deserve to be listed in the guide as well.
Another concept you bring up, which seems also related to what you just said, is this notion of reciprocity. All of this is about making sure that the resources are valuable to and valued by the community. So can you explain to me what reciprocity means in this context? And again, sort of why that's an important element of what you did?
So reciprocity is very huge in my culture, you know, as an Indigenous person, and we're always doing like giveaways. Like for instance, when I graduated, I gave things away like to my classmates and my professors and to my daycare lady for watching my children while I was in school. And that's kind of how it is, right? Like you gift things to people, I think, to show like your respect and your honor for them. So when we came back to meet with the tribal communities, I kind of was feeling it as like they were giving us their time, their knowledge, their expertise so that we could use it for the resource guide. But we were also, like I said, when I was calling these places, they didn't know a lot about HMHB, but we have a lot of awesome programs they could benefit from, but they were eligible for, like all the programs were always open to Native people, but it's just that they didn't know about it. Part of it, I had our program manager at the time, she's now our ED, I wanted her, I said, no, you need to talk about HMHB, you need to tell these people what all you have to offer so that their communities can benefit. So that was part of the meetings, like we started out with sharing like what all HMHB could do and like what we have to offer and like ask like, what, how can we help? You know, here's what we have, what will be useful to you. So that really felt to me, like it really reminded me of this reciprocity, right? Of where I'm kind of like, showing them like, hey, this is what HMHB has. Is any of it relevant to you? Do you need anything? What can we do to help? We're here. And then in exchange, you know, they were giving us all of their knowledge and information about how they're serving their community, the perinatal population and the babies in their community. And then of course, you know, like it was always important to me that we don't want people to have to volunteer for this. Like they're busy people doing so much in their community. So we made sure to offer gift cards to everybody for their time to show like, hey, we value your time. So there was just like multiple different exchanges that for me, everything I do in research or work, I approach in an Indigenous way because I am an Indigenous person and I was raised with these tenets and these values. Sometimes in school in the past and whatnot, in other work environments, you're kind of asked to leave that part of you at the door. And in my Indigenous health program, it really empowered me to show up as my whole self, all of us, you know, like, and helped us realize the value in that. And I think this is one way where that showed true, because coming at it in this way, I think helped kind of put the other participants at ease and helped us just do it in a good way and get it done. So, that's I wanted to make sure to highlight that because I want other people who are going to work in tribal communities to think about that. You know, like this is a pretty common Indigenous value, Indigenous cultural value, this reciprocity. So when you're asking for data or all these like administrative things, you know, think about like, what are you giving in return? And is it something that they want? Or, you know, so just trying to get people to think about that.
You mentioned in the paper that the work is ongoing. The guide, I assume, is complete. But what comes next? And you also, I should say, as I asked the question, you mentioned, of course, this is one state, and you don't assume you can generalize what you found here. But I do think there are lessons that can go beyond the borders of Montana. So just if you could tell me a little bit about what comes next.
Yeah, well, I mean, because of this project and how successful we were with it, the ED at the time, Bree McLaurin, who was also an author on the paper, and the board were willing to invest in a whole nother program at HMHB. So together, when I came on at HMHB, we created the Native American Initiatives Program to kind of say, hey, like, we're invested here. We're going to be a support for these tribal communities. So that is really cool because I've been doing research with tribes for quite some years, like even starting in my undergrad. And a lot of that work has taken me to different reservations in the United States. And so being able to work in Montana and where I'm from, serving my communities where I have lots of relatives, like that just means a lot to me. And so that's exciting. We have a lot of different programs that we work on in the Native American Initiatives Program. You mentioned the guide. So the guide is like kind of always ongoing because things change so much. So we do kind of monitor and are always asking people, you know, are you in our LIFS guide? Make sure you're in our LIFS guide. We were able to hire some interns at every reservation in an urban area. So at first we were just looking at the reservation communities, but we were able to hire an intern to look at the urban areas in the state to make sure that we're really focused on that Native cultural connection, to make sure that we were adding in the resources that were there. Because, you know, things change. A lot of these programs and whatnot are based on grants. And so when one grant goes away, another one comes, programs change. So it's going to always be updated. And then within the Native American Initiatives Program, another project that I started in school was creating a toolkit for providers who work with perinatal populations that are Indigenous in Montana to learn about cultural safety practices. So that's another thing that we do and that I do. I'm able to travel or do it remotely and train a bunch of providers on how to provide better, respectful care for Indigenous people, kind of beyond competency, more about trying to better understand Indigenous strengths and how they can be helpful and should be encouraged when patients are, say, like giving birth in a hospital, you know. And so there's a lot of good work happening. It's exciting. I have a lot of help, a lot of mentorship. Definitely can't do this alone. But without the Native American Initiatives Program, it would have been a lot harder to get started for sure.
Well, Dr. Stiffarm, thank you so much for doing the work and such a comprehensive job of explaining it, both in writing in the paper as well as here verbally. It's really great in an issue that we have devoted to the topic of perinatal mental health to not just look at it sort of at a global level, a national level, but to go into a community and see what it takes to document and hopefully improve the resources available. So thank you so much for the work that you've done, and thank you for being my guest today on A Health Podyssey.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you'll tell a friend about the Health Odyssey.